Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. I'm your host, James Coe, joined alongside a full house here on a beautiful Monday afternoon. The magical beard of fantasy, Matt Franchise. What's going on, my friend?
Heyo, I'm okay. I'm doing okay.
Can we get more than one word answers out of you today?
No.
Wow.
We got the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gilhar, rocking the fresh, new, high and tight cut, looking good.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Look at that, dude. I love it.
Fresh.
Fresh. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, was cracking?
Oh, it's a good, beautiful Monday.
Okay, that was so unconvincing.
I know.
I tried. Matt Harmon, the wide receiver prognosticator, was cracking?
I was going to say, it's really not that beautiful here. I mean, for Southern California standards, like, it's fine.
It's sort of cloudy.
It's a little cloudy.
It drizzled last night.
It's straight rain hard.
Unless you find the imperfect beautiful, which is what we have today, because normally the weather is perfect, and today it is imperfect.
I said by Southern California standards.
Wow, look at you. Just all of a sudden, just from West Virginia, just rolling through, and now
not from
just,
West Virginia. From
just not, all of a sudden, just now you're spoiled by L.A. weather now. I mean, look at you.
Hey, here's a random question. Do you guys think our Friday shows or our Monday shows are better?
Which
ones do you like better?
I love all our children.
I see where you're going with this, and I'm not going to play along.
I don't see where you're going.
I don't have an agenda.
I think Monday.
See, I think Fridays are better. I have no agenda with that, but I think Fridays are better.
Well, the only difference that I can think of that just screams in my face is the fact that Franchise isn't here.
But we do his phone around. See, and I think that's what Marcus was trying to set up over there, and this is just all of this is rigged right now, and I don't appreciate this. Your typical crooked media lying right now.
Yeah,
but I was just saying that I think it has nothing to do with we do his phone around Friday. It's sick.
Are you trying to slander me?
No.
See, that's where I thought this
no.
was going.
It wasn't. I'm
curious.
No, please stay. Wow. I enjoy you more than I enjoy at least two of the other people in this room.
I got a helicopter outside, so I'll just take that home.
No, that's mine, bro.
You got Harmon's helicopter?
Which, by the way, we got to hurry this up. I got a meeting at 4.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. Hollywood Harmon pulling.
Hollywood
gross.
What a great nickname. I love it. We got our big storylines today. We've got your Week 7 targets and touches. Some surprising leaders in the clubhouse for Week 7. We'll break it down, what it means moving forward. We're going to get to your waiver wire as well. And then, of course, we always break down some of your top performers and some of your biggest disappointments as well. But we start the show, as always, with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
I watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, here we go. Top news out of Atlanta. Tevin Coleman was doing work against San Diego. He looked good out there. Nice and explosive. 74 total yards. Had that touchdown as well. And then, hurt his hamstring. We don't know what his status is going to be moving forward, but I tell you what.
Right now it doesn't sound good.
Why can't we have nice things?
I don't know. He looked good out there, but doesn't sound like he's going to go on Sunday against Green Bay. Oh, boy. Speaking of Green Bay, Demarius Randle had growing surgery. He's going to miss
growing surgery?
Well, he had surgery on his core muscle group is what they said. I think it's in his groin.
Well, you said growing. It sounded like I was teasing.
Growing.
That is how James growing.
That's
it. Okay. He does say growing.
Growing?
When he means growing.
Growing? Okay. he had surgery on his core muscle groups. Is going to be missing at least a few weeks, up to 6 weeks possibly, maybe more. Sam Shields, meanwhile, also in that defensive backfield, already placed on IR with concussions. Packers set to travel to ATL. The Packers already giving up a lot of wide receiver yardage. I would imagine Julio Jones is going to see a lot of work.
Look, if you do rankings and he's not your wide receiver one, you're probably doing it wrong. I know it's Monday at 2:44 as we
right.
do this, but the Packers have been gashed already. Julio's gashed pretty much every defense he's faced.
That's right.
It's a recipe for disaster.
I wonder if this is going to be a high scoring.
Oh, 100%. This game's probably going to have, you know, from our friends that reside in the desert, is probably going to be predicted as a high-scoring affair.
All right.
It's going to end in a 6-6 tie.
I know, seriously.
Stop.
By the way, can I ask you about this? I didn't have time to look this up, but what's up with their backfield, Green Bay?
It's not good.
Trash.
Don Jackson hurt his hand. Niall Davis is pretty much the only running back there, so you're going to get a healthy mix of him. I would assume they're going to defer to the veteran now that he has a full – he was trying to study the playbook as much as he could in, like, 36 hours, but with the benefit of them playing on Thursday night is he then has, like, 10 days to prepare for Sunday.
That's a good point.
He's a veteran coming from a West Coast system. Verbiage and stuff is different, but he should be able to slide in and take some carries away from Cobb and Montgomery. Not that they will stop doing that altogether, because I think that's going to be a core part of their offense moving forward. But Davis looks like the guy to own, and I wrote as much in the waiver wire column, which we'll get to later.
It's funny. How many questions have you guys gotten about Randall Cobb and Ty Montgomery being designated as running back?
Oh, I handled that right away. The first one I got today, because, you know, another website put out that they are going to give him the running back eligibility.
Are they?
Yes, they are.
That's silly.
It is happening elsewhere.
It is happening elsewhere. Oh, I immediately quote tweeted that. I said, listen, everybody, I just write the words on the website. I do not program the game. Please do not at me at this time about this issue, because none of us in this room can handle that. And I'm pretty sure, actually, I think it's a league policy that we can't even, or I heard somebody talking about that day, like, I don't think we can even do that unless the team actually made that.
Right. Switch. Because I was going to say, like, we go as the league arm of, you know, as the, of our fantasy arm of the league, we go as the teams go. Like, when people like, getting in the weeds of it, but we'll clamor like, you have so-and-so listed as a D-end, and he should be a linebacker. He plays in a 3-4.
Right.
And we're like,
if it's on the team website,
that's what it is on here.
Take it up with the team,
however they designate him, and I just pulled up the Packers roster, and right now he's a wide receiver. I do not see that changing. Therefore, I do not see it changing on our site.
There you go.
But in terms of on-the-field stuff, I mean, I think that Ty Montgomery should remain in this role that they found for him.
100%.
I mean, in really a souped-up, theoretic type of role there, I think that, like, pushing 40 passes should be a weekly thing for Aaron Rodgers at this point, because they're not going to have a consistent running game, and they can use that as an extension of it.
You know, totally. And I'll say this. We've seen 2 weeks of Ty Montgomery as well. PPR monster.
10 catches in each of the last 2 weeks. He adds a little flavor on the ground. He's dynamic after the catch, too, because – like you said, he's got moves, but he's also big and bulky. He's got good balance. He's hard to bring down.
Man.
So, yeah, he's a must-add in PPR formats.
NFC, staying in the NFC there. The Bears say Jay Cutler has been cleared to play. He's been out since week two, where he was listed as, quote-unquote, day-to-day.
Hey, man. Hmm. I mean, every day they asked, and he wasn't ready. So
now magically he's better.
Today he's better.
He had an injured thumb, FYI. Brian Hoyer had surgery on his broken arm. He was placed on IR. Matt Barkley was apparently not the answer for Chicago.
Shocking.
Alshon Jeffrey owners, I would imagine, feel better today than they did yesterday.
They should.
Yes.
You know, because – and maybe we'll get to this a little bit later, but there are a couple of quarterbacks coming back this week for whom they're, you know, the owners of their wide receivers should be excited. Alshon Jeffrey should be thrilled about Jay Cutler coming back.
Yes.
And Brandon Marshall owners should be a little more excited that Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the starter for the Jets.
I want to know what kind of magical spell he owns that no matter what team he goes plays for, he's going to start. It is amazing.
Brian Hoyer had that.
I say that Hoyer magic, right?
That Hoyer magic.
Hoyer had the same thing where he essentially, it is NFL law that those two, wherever little known addition to the NFL rulebook, wherever those two go, they must start. But yeah, I mean, I think that this is definitely good news for Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, absolutely.
All right, Josh McCown has been cleared to practice as well. Does it mean anything for Gary Barnage? They had a little bit of chemistry going.
But I don't think he will – I don't think that he'll start over Cody Kessler if both are healthy, and I think the team is pretty much intimated as much.
All right.
For the Browns, who are obviously bad, we had Maurice Jones-Drew going today trying to drum up a pool of when they're going to get their first win. And it's looking at the schedule, it's pretty tough.
There aren't a lot of opportunities there.
If they're going to be bad, why would they not just at least, you know, I don't think Cody Kessler's the future, but he might be their future backup.
All right, there you go. Jordan Reed has also been cleared to practice. He's been dealing for multiple weeks now with concussion issues. We'll stay on that same sideline. Cornerback Josh Norman is now in concussion protocol. He slammed the side of his head whipping around trying to defend a pass against Marvin Jones, and he slammed his head hard into the turf there in Detroit. So now he's in concussion protocol, but his status remains unclear. If he does miss, though, A.J. Green should be cleared for takeoff.
Man, it doesn't even matter.
No?
Man, it's A.J. Green. I mean, really? Are you really going to sit A.J. Green just because?
No, I'm not saying. I'm not saying you're sitting A.J. Of course I'm not saying you're sitting A.J. Green. But here's the thing. I think if Josh Norman is out there, I think it's at least fair to say, hey, listen, you know, he might not get off for 20 points.
Yeah.
Really? I mean,
look, Josh Norman's been amazing this year.
He's
man.
Been fine. I mean, he's been very good this year. I'm not going to knock it, but you're talking about big play wide receivers. And I thought the funniest part of Julio Jones earlier this year going for 300 yards against the Panthers was Josh Norman trying to sip tea from Washington, not realizing that he got lit up last year by Julio Jones himself. Like, okay, maybe you didn't give up three bills, but you got run all over the field, dog. So, like, let's not sit here and try to talk trash like you didn't just get dragged all over everywhere. So, if Julio Jones can drag Josh Norman around, I don't see why A.J. Green couldn't do it either.
Yeah!
That game's in London, too, by the way.
Okay.
Ugh.
Which
is it?
Well, yeah, it is.
That means I got to be up at 5 o'clock. Sorry, I'm venting about what my Sunday is going to be like.
First of all,
don't mind me.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, you're real sympathetic from the audience.
Marcus Grant going off on a rant. Great segue into Geno Smith tearing his ACL.
Dang it.
I don't know what one of those has to do with the other at all. I
exactly what we're talking about. And Ryan Fitzpatrick apparently is mad at the Jets brass for some reason. I don't know.
I think Coach Todd Bowles said it best that look, if he's pissed off, hopefully he plays pissed off and then he throws less turnovers. I'm paraphrasing.
As long as it means less turnovers, I'm cool with him being angry, pretty much.
I mean, quite frankly, it doesn't even matter if he throws turnovers. Nobody's starting Fitz, right? It just matters for Brandon Marshall.
I mean, I don't know. I think the Jets quarterbacks can still be streaming options, even if
no Eric Decker. I mean, the offense.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, man. I think it means good things for Brandon.
But sorry, I was responding to an important in air quotes email thread about the Ty Montgomery stuff. But if we're talking about streaming the Jets quarterbacks, absolutely. Like less mediocre quarterbacks with less wide receiving talent have put up great days against the Browns.
Good point.
Oh yeah, they play the Browns this week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Game over.
Yeah. Game over. I'll say this. I don't know how comfortable you are running them out in redraft, but in daily? Okay. I can see it. Hey, can we react very quickly to Sunday Night Football? There's not a whole heck of a lot to react to. Nothing happened in this game. I will say this, though. It was the worst game I've ever seen, except it was also the funniest game I've ever seen as well.
Mm. It only got funny at the end.
Oh, absolutely. It was only funny at the very, very end.
You had to sit through a lot of unfunny to get to the funny.
It was hilarious at the end, though.
I have two thoughts on this.
Yes, please.
One, I agree with you. It was funny at the end. And
hilarious.
I live for bad football funny Twitter. I mean, I was firing off good tweet after good
Love
tweet
it.
Last night.
Love it.
Yeah. Believe me. It was good. But anyways, I enjoyed the game, though. I did enjoy watching the game.
What?
I don't know. We were talking about this before we started taping.
Okay.
I'm not going to begrudge you guys if you didn't like it because whatever, that's your thing.
All right.
But I enjoyed it, and I'm not afraid to admit it.
Here's my problem.
Yeah.
I love a good defensive football game.
100%.
Good plays,
yeah.
You know, great hits and stuff like that,
100%.
Smart schemes. This was a sloppy 4-hour game with people not doing their jobs.
Yep.
That is not an entertaining football game. There were like 50 billion holding calls. The refs weren't doing their jobs because there were numerous penalties that weren't called.
Right.
Both quarterbacks were sucking. Like,
yeah.
The Seahawks refused to give the ball to Kristen Michael. It was just like, it was a slop fest. And I get it. Yes, it was punctuated by these hilarious moments like, oh my God, they both missed a kick. But like, we waited 4 hours to do that. And I'm also,
what a payoff.
I'm also extra angry because I'm always stuck at the office until after Sunday Night Football because that's when I have to publish waiver wire. And it can't go up until after the game is over. So as this thing just dragged on and on and on and wasn't even entertaining, like at least the overtime game 2 weeks ago was entertaining.
Yeah.
Like with the, because I even made the joke, I was like, watch, Brock's going to come back and win this. And you're like, oh my God, he's actually going to do it. This was just painful.
Yeah, man. I mean, I fired off a tweet of just please God, do not let this game go to overtime.
Yeah.
But fantasy-wise,
prayers not answered. Catanzaro had a couple field goals, and Hauschka had a couple field goals, and
that was it. David Johnson, though, 41 touches.
I know, that's amazing.
Against the Seahawks.
13 targets in the passing game.
That's amazing.
Second only to Fitzgerald's 14.
Well, in a game that was 3-3 in four quarters, David Johnson actually had a good fantasy day.
That's a
ridiculous fantasy day, and he was inches from scoring a touchdown. He, like, stepped on the pylon.
I couldn't tell. Was that a touchdown?
No, it wasn't a touchdown. He stepped on the pylon and stepped out of bounds, and the ball had not crossed the goal line. So it was a good call.
All right.
171 total yards.
One thing of
note to
watch, though, is I know the Cardinals' passing game is not what it once was, but Jayron Brown tore his ACL.
Right.
Which gave J.J. Nelson some more run, and he is even faster than John Brown.
Yeah.
So if Brown continues to miss time, we don't know what's going on with
He's expected back this week.
Okay. But J.J. Nelson, I wrote about him in Deep Dive. It's just somebody to kind of keep on your radar because Floyd pulled up with a hamstring. Brown has been in and out of the lineup where if either one of those guys goes out, Nelson could be a good boomer bust, like, flex play.
Floyd looked horrible.
I was going to say, Floyd makes two or three just back-breaking mistakes every game.
He looks so bad.
That it's like
he's got no confidence. You could tell too. Yeah. He's out there. He's double catching stuff. I mean, he just he looks bad.
But I mean, I think that this has been the story of Michael Floyd's career.
It's true.
The second half of last year was like, man, this is when he's really putting it all together. But I think that was just the outlier, and the rest of this is what it is.
All right, so there you go. Russell Wilson also a big time fantasy disappointment. Doug Baldwin didn't do much. Seawoke, that was rough. Jimmy Graham didn't do anything either. So overall, pretty bad day unless you had David Johnson. So there you go. All right, let's get to our big storyline, shall we? Jay Ajayi going full Drake. He's going
back to back.
200-plus yard games and back-to-back games for Jay Ajayi. I forgot, where's that list of running backs that have done that? It's only like four other guys in the Hall of Famers.
Four other guys have done that.
Three other guys have done that.
What's his name? O.J. Simpson did it twice, I think.
O.J. Right? Simpson did it twice. Ricky Williams did it once. And Earl Campbell
did it once.
So the connection here is either you were an NFL or Pro Football Hall of Famer or you're a Dolphin.
True.
That's it.
Trends.
Those are the trends.
True that. 214 total yards. Had a touchdown as well. Week 7 versus Buffalo. Again, it's against Buffalo. It's not like this is a ragtag defense.
They're
but he
giving
had 20...
up 3.5 yards per carry coming into this game.
Jay Ajayi.
Or he ripped them to shreds. We kind of talked about this on Friday, that this looked like it could be his chance. And Harmon, I think you used this exact phrase of like, Ajayi's going to take the backfield and run with it. And I know I had him high in my rankings because I thought just the way he played last week that they weren't giving the ball back to Arian Foster, who is officially cooked. And, I mean, Ajayi's going to be darn near close to an RB1 moving forward.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? That is just wild.
He would have had two touchdowns, too, but he cramped up late. I don't know if it was the third or the fourth quarter. Williams scored his second rushing toudown in a row.
So, by the way, speaking of which,
Ajayi had a bigger day.
The fear was, you know, what happens to Ajayi when Arian Foster comes back? And I thought it was telling that in that game on Sunday, Jay Ajayi goes out of the game in the fourth quarter with what looks like a cramp. And instead of having it be Arian Foster coming in trying to salt the game away, it was Damian Williams.
Yeah.
You're right. No, you're 100% right. So there you go. Spencer Ware, meanwhile, 77 rush yards, 54 receiving yards, and also had that very long and impressive catch and run for touchdown. Meanwhile, Jamaal Charles, just one carry, 0 yards. We heard about swelling in his surgically repaired knee as well. I'll ask you guys this. What do you do with Spencer Ware? What do you do with Jamaal Charles?
Stop asking questions about whether you should start Spencer Ware
or start him high
and just hold on to him and ride him the rest of the way.
Yeah. There you go.
He's the feature back right now. I mean, Jamaal Charles is suffering setbacks. He doesn't look like himself. Like, again, you know, I think this is always the question to ask yourself. What is the reason for the Chiefs to change? They're winning games. This guy is playing well.
Right.
And Jamaal Charles is not. Like, just because Jamaal Charles has done this, that, or the other in his career doesn't give them incentive to go back to them if they're smart. And I think that the Chiefs are smart.
Right. And Charles isn't 100% healthy.
No.
2 weeks ago, he said he was 110%. His knee swelled up. He clearly wasn't healthy enough to get more than one. He got a carry in this game, and then he sat the rest of the game because he wasn't right. And Andy Reid said to the press, like, I'm not trying to hide anything. Like, Charles isn't right. It's a long season. When he's healthy, you know, he'll probably be more involved, but it's just he's not ready. Okay. Basically. So maybe later in the season, if the Chiefs want a playoff run, they leave him on the bench. There's no reason to rush him in there with Spencer Ware playing so well.
There's nothing you can do with Jamaal Charles either, right? Like, you basically just have to bench him because you're not trading him.
Nobody's gonna,
you can't get value.
Nobody's going to buy him on a bum knee right now.
Right.
The thing is, he could, if he does get right and this team wants to gear him, you know, ramp him up for the postseason, he could be like a playoff hero if you've got him stashed on your bench.
Great point.
For sure.
That's a great point.
He's never been fresh in December in his entire career. And he's a smaller back. I mean, he's not one of these Adrian Petersons or David Johnsons or something like that. Like, he's a slider back. So, yeah, if he's faster.
So he's not a cyborg, is what you're saying?
Well, he's not a cyborg, which nobody is because they're humans.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I've been watching Westworld a lot, bro.
Yeah.
We're just talking about football players. But no, I think that Jamaal Charles will be big for the Chiefs in their playoff run, hopefully, if it all breaks right. But at the same time, look, this is what we saw with Marshawn Lynch last year too, and it was like eventually Marshawn's going to get back and he's going to take this job back from Thomas Rawls. Thomas Rawls ended up getting injured, but it was pretty clear the torch had been passed, and it just took a while for everybody to accept it. And I think this is what the same thing we're seeing here. Charles has torn his ACL twice. He's approaching 30 years old if he hasn't hit it already. We might just be at the end of the road. It's what happens for these guys. It goes quickly.
You know what? It's kind of opened up an idea to expand this segment a little bit, but speaking of torch passing, we think this is what's happening in, I mean, we kind of talked about it last week in the Friday pod, but what's happening in Green Bay with Jordy. Like, he didn't see that many targets this past week. The offense moved well through the short passing game and putting Montgomery and Cobb in space. Like, do we think if they do it again versus Atlanta and it works, is Jordy going to, I mean, you wrote about it in News and Notes, but is Jordy's value going to sink down to like a matchup-based wide receiver two or three the rest of the way?
I think so. I don't think he is going to have the opportunities. I don't think he's right. I don't know what it is. He's 31 years old. He's coming off an ACL tear. Matt Harmon, you showed us a great next-gen stat, right? There's basically no separation between he and the defender. And, you know, to your point, Alex, maybe I hate to put it on him, but maybe it's Aaron Rodgers wanting to throw to Jordy early in the season, and that's why he was holding the ball for so darn long and the offense stalling. Could that possibly be a reason as well? I think it's at least it's in the realm of possibility.
Absolutely.
And I think, again, you have to ask yourself the question, why would the team change if something is working?
That question you raised was made me think about the Packers.
Yeah, like and somebody tweeted that to me on Thursday night. They're like, why aren't they looking at Jordy Nelson? I'm like, dude, I even quote tweeted, I was like, dude, think about more than just your stupid fantasy team right now. The Packers are winning this game by a lot by going to guys like Devontae Adams and Ty Montgomery. They're not going to change up the target distribution just because you drafted Jordy Nelson in the second round.
That's
if teams are winning, they want to win games. They don't want to put up fantasy numbers for you. Again, bad news. Nobody cares about your team, especially not the actual players.
Right.
So, I mean, if something is working on the field, there's no reason to give me a good reason why it's just going to suddenly go back to what you expected.
And on the plus side for the Packers offense, if Jordy's out there, he's going to draw the best defender, which, you know, takes some of the pressure off the other guys, too.
At least for now.
At least for now.
Right.
That's
exactly.
That's a very good point. All right, there you go. Oh, by the way, we talk about Spencer Ware. The Chiefs have a great matchup yet again on Sunday. They take on the Colts.
Dude, the Colts just get gashed by running backs every single week.
Every single week. Start him up with confidence. Yes. All right, we talked about Jordy. Can we talk about another wide receiver most folks took in the second round, early second, maybe, heck, even in the late first?
Matt Harmon, who's an idiot.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. That was uncalled for.
That was really uncalled for.
That was great. Allen Robinson. What do we do with Allen Robinson? He was playing Oakland, the worst pass defense in the league.
He has become an anchor on your fantasy roster right now.
2 receptions, 9 yards.
Because
Allen Robinson.
If anything, my suggestion would have been wait for him to put up a big number and then try to sell high on him because the schedule isn't particularly great for him the rest of the way.
So I felt like
over the next month or so, he had 2 or 3 really good matchups that maybe you could exploit and then try to sell high on him because you're not going to want to deal with him in the playoffs. But if that's what he's giving you against the Raiders, against arguably the worst secondary in the league.
The Raiders. So bad.
There's there's nothing you can do. I mean, you're going to be scared to run him out there.
Yeah.
You're going to be scared to leave him on your bench. You can't trade him. You don't want to drop him.
Right.
I mean, he really is just an anchor on your roster right now. Yes, exactly.
I don't know what you do. Allen Robinson, 9 yards against Oakland on 8 targets. He had a season-high 72 yards in week one against Green Bay, but then about 50-ish yards per game in the next 4 games after. What do you do here? I don't even know what to do. Here's the thing. Could you trade Allen Robinson for Spencer Ware straight up? You think that could happen?
Oh, God, no.
No.
No, I wouldn't do it.
I think somebody would pull the trigger.
To trade A-Rob away right now, you're going to have to pair him with someone else because no one's just going to want A-Rob.
Name value, bro.
Let's go to Harmon here. He's looked awash in sadness during this whole discussion. I could just see in the back of his mind, hello, dark.
Well, before you start, Harmon.
Yes.
This isn't an indictment of Allen Robinson and his talent.
That's a good point.
No.
It is a bigger indictment of the fact that the Jaguars offense has been stuck in mud all year long.
Blake Bortles is wild.
He's just been flat out awful this year.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's just a deep sigh before I even start talking. I mean, I don't think there is an offense that I've watched this year that has been more hamstrung by their quarterback. And, you know, Blake Bortles.
Dude, the Browns have gotten better play out of Cody Kessler at all than the Jags have out of Bortles.
And Josh McCown and even Robert Griffin III.
Kevin Hogan,
bro!
Which, by the way, is ridiculous. I don't even know if we should talk about
that. That's a different
Kevin
discussion.
Hogan,
yeah, go back to your Bortles point.
I mean, he can't get the ball deep. He can't fire off routine plays. He can't beat simple cover two defenses, which is, you know, that's something he should easily be able to beat. But I think defensive coordinators have figured him out. I don't think what we're seeing is a lot of, you know, he was not a perfect player last year, Blake Bortles.
No.
But he was able to make plays. He was able to be aggressive. A lot of that has regressed. He's taken a visible step back as a player from year two to year three.
Right.
And I think that, listen, I said this in the Next Gen Stats column last week, that if this doesn't happen against Oakland, it's not going to happen this year probably, because I think Bortles is just a sunk cost right now. And he even, remember, he had mechanical issues in his rookie season and then said he needed the offseason to get right, or the coaching staff said he needed the offseason to get right. And he worked really hard to improve from year one to year two. But that is a tough thing to pull off in the middle of the season. So I don't know what to do with Allen Robinson. I mean, I would just hold him and just hope that it gets better, but it's probably not going to. And I think that that's just where we're at right now. I mean, the only thing the Jags passing offense can do well is dump the ball off on 5-yard drags to Marquise Lee, and, you know, credit to Marquise.
You mean the best receiver on the Jaguars?
Shut all the way the hell up. I mean, but credit to Marquise Lee. He has played well this year.
Well, he's healthy.
What they've asked him to do.
He has stayed healthy is the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But, I mean, yeah, if you have Allen Robinson right now, I mean, I think you just have to hold on. And, I mean, the talent is there. And, like, he will have weeks. I mean, that's the thing. Like, he's going to be targeted in the red zone especially. He had a 2-touchdown outing against the Ravens. He had a touchdown against the Colts. Like, their short passing has, up until last week, had been relatively decent. It's just they haven't hit a single pass that's traveled farther than 20 yards in the air.
Not great. It's not great.
Speaking of not great.
Odell Beckham Jr., also not great in week 7. 5 receptions for just 49 yards. Did receive 9 targets. It's about right for Odell. But he was taking on an L.A. Rams defense that is not good against wide receivers. And I just don't know, man. Like, the way that they're utilizing Odell Beckham Jr. right now, there's very, very few deep shots in that McAdoo offense, and I don't get why. It's the same offense they used last year, and they were taking way more deep shots with Odell. I don't remember one pass they threw deep downfield to Odell Beckham Jr. in that game, and it makes no sense.
Well, if you follow along on Giants Twitter, or just, you know, follow any Giants fans or beat writers,
okay,
the drumbeats of frustration with Ben McAdoo's play calling are getting louder and louder by the week.
Right.
And I don't, you know, again, I don't know if this is all of his play calling or if it's that Eli Manning has decided he's just not going to pull the trigger on those shots downfield. But I think the big takeaways have been, yeah, a lot of dink and dunk and a lot of underneath stuff. And really, until the last week or two, a failure to get Odell Beckham involved early in the game. I mean, you know, I think the big game he had a couple weeks ago, we saw that where he really got loose and they got him the ball early and often. But there have been a lot of games where you don't see a lot of targets, but the targets are headed toward, you know, Sterling Shepard or Victor Cruz or, you know, somebody else in that offense. And finally, after a while, they start to get Odell Beckham in there. But there is, I think, you know, I think the Giants, and maybe with the bye week, they can look at this. I think they got to go back and rethink what they're doing, because at least offensively, they're just a dull, not exciting group to watch.
I don't understand it.
One thing that this was a good point that, not to name drop or anything, but I was on the couch with Mike Nolan on Sunday for Game Day Blitz show.
Name drop.
He made the point of how it's a difficult transition sometimes to go from coordinator on one team to head coach on that same team.
Yeah.
Because of that, it's basically like you're going from big brother to being dad on the team. Whereas good big point. Brother, you can be pal with everybody. You can always be like, yeah, man, I'd love to do that, but, you know, we got to run it by the guy over there, or, like, that's not my call. We got to go to that guy. Now he is that guy. So, like, you have to wonder if, I don't know if he's lost control or if he's trying to do too much or whatever, but it's happened in two instances this year where pretty good, potent offenses have, like, throttled way back, both in New York and Tampa Bay. Like, Winston hasn't improved. That offense kind of sucks. And in both cases, it was the OC jumping to the head coach to keep, quote-unquote, continuity. But maybe that wasn't the best case. Something, I mean, it's really not quantifiable. It's just something I wanted to get out there to more people so we can think about it as we move forward and look at these situations.
I think that's a great point, and I think that's something that we should probably pay attention to. Like, they're two completely different jobs just from a football standpoint. Like,
100%.
Just because you're a good coordinator does not mean you're going to be a good head coach, but also just the transition that that also entails. But, you know, also, I wonder, too, if there were two off-field things that took some toll on Odell Beckham and the Giants as a whole. One, he did come in pretty questionable with a hip pointer.
Yeah.
And I was looking at Eli Manning's next gen stats passing chart, which you can find on my timeline. Like, he threw almost exclusively to the right side of the field, where Beckham lined up almost exclusively on the left side of the field.
It's interesting. I was wondering that when I was watching the game, and if next gen stats bought out.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe he just wasn't. I mean, he still saw a pretty decent amount of targets, but I just wonder if the game plan was to really not funnel through Beckham.
Those might have been his first reads, because Robert Quinn came back, and him and Aaron Donald and the rest of that Rams off defensive line is quite ferocious.
Yeah, because they can't pass protect. And also, I mean, I think this Giants team really has – I mean, listen, they haven't done well with this whole distraction that they've brought on themselves thanks to the whole Josh Brown thing, if you ask me. Like, they're constantly having to answer questions about it and all that, and nothing has really gone well for them. I also wonder if that's maybe taken a little bit of a mental toll on the team as a whole, and that's why the offense looks like hell.
All right, well, there you go. Breaking news, by the way. I just saw that Dez Bryant was back at practice Monday for the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
He's going
to
play.
Is expected to play, yes. He is expected to play Sunday night. At home versus the Philadelphia Eagles.
So the Cowboys are getting their second best receiver back.
What is wrong with you,
bro? All right, let's talk about targets and touches here. Surprising numbers here in Week 7. We talked about Davante Adams a little bit already. So, but 16 targets for him, 13 receptions, 132 yards, 2 touchdowns. I'm assuming we all like him moving forward. Yes.
Yeah, as like a flex wide receiver 3, I mean, he's got great touchdown upside in this offense, and if they do start transitioning to more of the formations and things they deployed this past week, I think he's still going to be volatile. He's obviously not going to see that kind of volume every week.
Right.
But like, he could be a decent flex play going forward.
This was weird. Tavon Austin had 15 targets.
Yeah.
10 receptions, just 57 yards.
Ooh.
Did have a touchdown though. Also added a carry for 10 yards. I refer, or defer rather, to our Tavon Austin.
I knew it was coming my way.
My guy Marcus Ramsey.
You know, it's funny because the opportunity has been there for Tavon Austin to produce. He just hasn't produced. And I think nothing sums it up better than, you know, a friend of the stronghold, Pat Doherty, a.k.a. Roto Pat, on Twitter, who tweeted this morning that Tavon Austin is 8th in the NFL in targets and 70th in yards.
Holy hell.
That is
the model of inefficiency.
I mean, some of it has to do with, you know, inconsistent quarterback play, but like, admittedly, some of it is just about a player who doesn't take advantage of the opportunities there.
Harmon, did you look at his average depth of target on Sunday?
It's higher than Julian Edelman's, I'll tell you that. But I mean, let's I think we should just make a petition going forward to just count about half of the targets that, that Tavon Austin gets, because they're like only half of them are like real targets,
right?
You know, because he gets used a bunch behind the line of scrimmage. I mean, I'm being somewhat coy about all this, but like, yeah, I mean, it's like, why are they giving him so many targets? That's the question. Why are they feeding the ball to him so much? I think they just want to make Tavon Austin something that he's not. They got one pretty good year out of him last year. They overpaid him, as James talked about consistently. And now, like, they want to make him a feature part of their offense, but that's not who this guy is.
It's crazy. Are they trying to justify the contract, you think?
I don't know. I don't want to get in the head of the Rams coaching staff.
That seems a bit much. But I tell you what a day in PPR. If you had Tavon Austin, 10 receptions, 57 yards of touchdown, and 10 yards rushing, that's just insane. Mike Wallace, meanwhile, 13 targets for Mike Wallace, 10 catches. This is a little bit more pliable here. 120 yards
Wallace. He's the number one wide receiver while Steve Smith is out.
Yep.
It's not particularly close in this offense right now.
Is he going to come back, Steve Smith? Where's he at?
I think eventually.
No, he's a high ankle sprain. He's an older player. Who knows?
All right, there you go. Michael Thomas in New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
13 targets, 10 receptions, 130 yards. He's had three consecutive really good weeks now in fantasy. What do we make of Michael Thomas?
I think he's their number one receiver.
I agree.
Holy hell.
I agree.
So
Michael
Thomas has played 80% of the team snaps since week three.
Okay.
He leads the team in that span in every relevant receiving stat with 26 catches, 323 yards, three touchdowns on a team high 38 targets. He runs a ton of slant and crossing patterns, and he's a big dude that does that too, and that's why he's able to just have consistent yardage as long as he gets targets. I mean, he's played really well. He fits exactly what the Saints have wanted to do. And again, you know, just mentioning that consistency, if you just want to look at fantasy scoring alone,
right?
So since that same week three span, he's been much more consistent than, you know, Brandon Cooks, the supposed number one receiver, too.
His floor has been 10 points in the last 4 weeks.
I mean, wow. Thomas has 50.3 points in that span. Cooks has 40.3. And Cooks had that one-point outing, but he also had that big outing against, the Panthers at home. So, I mean, just – well, the more consistent player, he's playing just as many snaps as the rest of these guys. I mean, it's really impressive how they all come together as a group, and Cooks and Snead and Thomas all complement each other. But,
right.
I mean, this dude is for real.
I like it.
Yeah, no doubt. Interesting, good tweet. Again, RotoPass getting a bunch of shout-outs on here, but he said Michael Thomas is 10 for 130 on Sunday. We're both more than he ever posted at Ohio State, and he's already over half of the way to his senior yardage total, which was just shy of 800 yards. So, I mean, he's a talented player playing with a great quarterback. Like, it wasn't too hard to see that he was going to be this productive. I'm just surprised at the share of the targets he's owning, and I think if this continues, he'll probably be the leader on this team.
And I wonder, too, like, I said this to Franchise today also, like, Kobe Fleener and Josh Hill have been splitting tight end snaps. I think they have 57, Kobe Fleener has 57% of the snaps, and Josh Hill has 59% of the snaps over the last 2 weeks. I wonder, too, if Thomas really is taking over that role, because, again, a lot of slants and drags in the middle of the field, that takes away some tight end type of targets.
Where have his recent touchdowns come? None of them were super long, were they?
Ooh, Thomas?
Thomas, yeah. Were they?
I think they've almost all been in the red zone.
Which is kind of something we posited. I remember when they drafted him after getting Cooper, was could he vulture Fleener's touchdown upside, because they run a similar patterns out of the slot as Colston used to do.
Yeah, is he? I mean, that's the thing. We haven't really seen a consistent Saints wide receiver on a week-to-week basis with a good floor since Marcus Colston, really. And he fits that big body mold. I know that's kind of a lazy comparison, but it seems to make sense, at least off the cuff and off the eyeball test. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, Colston played more in the slot than Thomas does, I believe.
Yeah, Thomas has been playing outside. And to answer your question, all three of his touchdowns have come in the red zone. All three of them have come within inside the 10-yard line.
Dang. So, yeah, Whoa. He is destroying Kobe Fleener's value.
And I think he leads the team on both of those targets as well.
Nice.
Oh, man. I thought Snead was the guy that was going to take away Kobe Fleener's productivity. It might be the combination of Snead and Michael Thomas, and maybe that's why we're seeing more of Josh Hill, who's going to be a little bit better blocker than Kobe Fleener. All right, Amari Cooper there in Oakland, 5 targets. I put him on surprising Week 7 targets because, again, just 5 targets for Amari Cooper, 4 receptions, 29 yards versus the Jags.
There's one big reason for this.
Tell me.
And his name is Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
I asked Harmon about it after to hit up his pals at NGS to get us the results. And what was it? 26 routes, one catch for 4 yards?
Correct.
That's all Ramsey gave up?
Yeah, he covered him on 26 pass plays, yeah, and before he was ejected. And then right after Ramsey was ejected, 3 plays later, Amari Cooper busted his biggest catch of the day for 18 yards.
How interesting.
Yeah, but so this was his – and this actually kind of happened. I don't know if he's on the list, but I wasn't looking, not to jump the gun here. But same thing happened to Marvin Jones. I mean, his target share is dropping in Detroit a little bit, but he didn't see a target until the third quarter because Josh Norman shadowed him. So Ramsey's going to be moving forward one of these cornerbacks we might actually have to worry about from a fantasy perspective.
That's interesting. I like it.
Ramsey had been doing good against number one receivers, especially smaller guys. He locked down
Steve Smith,
T.Y. Hilton, Randall Cobb he did a good job against. Alshon Jeffrey bodied him a couple times, a bit of a bigger receiver in the first half of that game against the Bears, but then in the second half,
one catch for 3 yards,
yep.
I believe.
Yep.
Okay. Wow. All right. Jalen Ramsey on high alert. I like it. You learn something every day on this podcast. Chris Thompson, 7 targets, 40 yards through the air, 12 carries, 73 yards. The reason I bring him up, though, Matt Jones was benched because he's having a fumbling issue.
Yep.
Shock.
It
hasn't gone away.
Will continue to have.
Is Chris Thompson the guy?
I think he's an excellent add because they've used him a lot in the passing game to begin with. And he saw a lot more run. He led the team in carries with Jones on the sideline and them sprinkling in Robert Kelly a little bit. But he's dynamic. They use him a lot in space, and I think he'll have a safe floor for standard league players. But, man, if you are in PPR and Chris Thompson isn't on a roster, like, he should be a priority this week.
I 100% agree with that. Latavius Murray, a season high, 18 carries.
Yeah.
This was nice to see because before his injury, he was getting like 8 carries, 10 carries. And then, you know, they'd split the workload between DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard and Jameis Olawale and all these guys. And it was Latavius Murray. Owners were kind of freaking out because his volume wasn't there. He kept scoring touchdowns, which kept his fantasy value afloat. But he's out for a couple weeks. They lean on these other guys. Maybe the coaching staff realize,
oh, crap, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, okay, we need Latavius. He's our best back. Let's load him up with carries. So this was
carries,
nice.
59 yards, 2 touchdowns. Here's the other thing that I was encouraged by as well. I also saw 5 targets in the passing game.
Nice.
To me, I don't know. I know that a lot of folks have been, you know, not that impressed with Latavius Murray, and I understand why. But I'll tell you what, when I saw DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard get consistent work, it was even less inspiring. I think you're right. I think the coaching staff there in Oakland is like, you know what? Latavius actually ain't that bad.
Yeah. And it's surprising, too, because he had a turf toe injury, which can be like a lingering thing. So it's good to see him back out there and be somewhat effective. He only averaged 3.3 yards per carry, but 20 touches is nice.
It's just a volume and opportunity based situation with the running back position. I mean, look at Melvin Gordon. He's been inefficient as hell, but the fact that he's playing on a really good offense and gets a ton of carries, that's really all that matters.
Red zone carries.
Antonio Gates, 10 targets, 5 receptions, 38 yards. Not great. Hunter Henry, 3 targets. 1 reception.
Why Hunter Henry?
16 yards.
Who, by the way, just reading Twitter right now, is in the concussion protocol.
Hunter Henry is?
Yes.
Oh.
I did not realize that.
Crap.
I know. Even going back to week 5, though, the two's playing time was trending in the opposite direction.
That's right.
Antonio Gates' snap share had gone up from 35 to 47 to 51%. And conversely, Hunter Henry's snap share had declined from 82 to 68 to 63% yesterday.
Okay, there you go. I was trying to find his snap percentage yesterday, but I kind of had the feeling that was the case. The offense there in San Diego doesn't feature a lot of too tight formations where both guys go out there. So.
Well, they do a little bit, and I think this is what they originally wanted to have when they had Ladarius Green, and it just never quite manifested itself as such. And I thought maybe they were headed this way with Henry and Antonio Gates, but now
I like the idea too of when they ran Hunter Henry out there in the slot, but I don't know. We'll see that.
For the record, their second most deployed formation is 1 running back, 2 tight ends, 2 wide receivers. Mm-hmm. They've done that on 88 plays total. They've also done 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, 1 wide out, 23 plays. and a few other ones. Those are primarily running plays, I would imagine. Mm. But on passing plays, far and away, what they use the most is 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three wideouts.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay.
They have a good set of three wide receivers, man. Tyrell Williams balling out.
He is crushed. I think he's their number one wide receiver now.
He did well in the first half, but we didn't see too much of him in the second half, no?
I mean, it's like a 1A, 1B, 2 kind of thing, but...
He ripped it up in the slot, which made sense because they wanted to move him away from Desmond Trufant, who pretty much just strictly sits on the left cornerback position, but also can move around to right corner too, but not going to travel a guy into the slot. He had 89% of his yards when he lined up in the slot yesterday.
All right, there you go. Kyle Rudolph, 11 targets for Kyle Rudolph, 5 receptions, 55 yards. He's being utilized in this offense. I don't know how efficient he's going to be, but he's getting the volume. I'll say that.
Yeah, we have to appreciate the volume in this one because Sam Bradford got whooped in this game because they were starting two new tackles, and that defensive front in Philadelphia is something else. Depending on the source, they either hit Sam Bradford 16 times and sacked him 6 times or hit him 12 times and sacked him 6 times.
Oh.
Either way, not great. But, you know, I had Rudolph in a PPR league, so 5 for 55 is okay. And knowing that he's such a favorite target of Bradford's and is basically matchup proof, like, he's a top 5 tight end pretty much the rest of the way here for me, I'd say.
Wow.
No question. I mean, look, again, just the volume.
In PPR or standard? Or
both? Both. I mean, he's their top red zone weapon. Okay. Yeah. So he gets all the targets for PPR and has the touchdown upside for standard. Which, at tight end, when, what was it, Marcus? 3 tight ends had 60 or more receiving yards?
5 tight ends had 60 or more receiving yards this week.
5.
That's it.
Oh, boy.
That's why Rudolph, in a game where everything went against him with his quarterback getting murdered, still putting up 55 yards on 11 targets? Hell yeah.
Led the team in targets.
11 of them. It's pretty good. Yeah. We'll stay at the tight end position. Jack Doyle, Rainbow 6. Woo! 10 targets, 9 catches, 78 yards, and a touchdown. Almost the one drop he had. Could have been another touchdown as well. But 10 targets in that offense, it's looking pretty and I get that Dwayne Allen had the ankle injury. We don't know what his availability or his status will be for Sunday either. But I tell you, every single time I look at this kid's stat line, when I watch him play, he's just so secure with that football. I love what he brings to the table here for the Colts.
You called it, James, early on when he first started surfacing. He really is going full Gary Barnage on us right now. I mean, this is exactly the same sort of situation. But also just, you know, going forward, when one of these Colts tight end misses a game, start the other one.
Because, right.
I mean, that is the trend right now. And Jack Doyle played 94% of the team snaps yesterday. He led the team in red zone targets, collecting 6 of the 5 that Andrew Luck distributed. Frank Gore was the only one that got one. And now he leads the team for the season in red zone targets with 8. So, I mean, listen, this is I think even when Dwayne Allen gets back, Dwayne Allen has been is a solid NFL player, but I think they might want to just leave Jack Doyle as a starting tight end. I think he's been better this season.
For the season, Jack Doyle is the 3rd highest scoring tight end in fantasy.
He has kind of, in a weird way, become the new Kobe Fleener in the sense that while we've all been waiting on Dwayne Allen, and Dwayne Allen continues to be either hurt or underperforming, Jack Doyle's just there.
How
he's
dare you
around,
associate Doyle?
And
with
he's
Kobe
making
Fleener.
Plays.
Hey, at least Jack
targets.
Doyle can block, though.
At least Jack Doyle can catch passes, too.
And in traffic when people are near him, happens frequently on a football field.
He's the anti Kobe Fleener. I'm so offended, Marcus.
I mean, they look kind of the same out there. What, running around? They're both big.
Yeah, sure.
But his catch percentage, though.
Yeah,
that's special.
Yeah, it was a good call of yours, James, to call him Gary Barnage back in like week 1.
Right, you were on top of that.
There you go.
And he's looking that way right now.
Where is he in terms of tight end ranks? Number 3.
Number
3rd overall.
That is sad.
Through 7 weeks
after Greg Olsen, Martellus Bennett,
because he's had
Jack
some
Doyle.
Bad weeks too.
Well, he
Jack
has,
Doyle.
But
he had weeks where he's disappeared.
Walker's been injured.
Yeah.
Kobe Fleener.
I mean,
sucks.
I love Jack Doyle. Don't get me wrong, but I mean that's a sad list.
Right.
Yeah, it is a sad list.
Dude,
it's very sad.
He had a back to back stretch where he caught one pass for 6 yards, and then the next week two catches for 8 yards.
Oh, it just speaks to how important touchdowns are at the tight end position, though,
yes.
Standard scoring, because
Good point.
Without them, you know, a guy like Dennis Pitta probably has more targets and maybe even more catches than Jack Doyle, but I don't think Pitta's found the end zone once, so he's buried on the tight end range.
He has not.
All right, let's get to everyone's favorite, waiver wire. You could go catch this every single week. Alex Gilhard does an amazing job just sifting through all of the waiver wire options. Give us some of your top waiver wire guys, Alex Gilhar.
Well, I mean, off the top, running back is a scary place right now. But if for some reason Jaquizz Rodgers, Mike Gillisley, or Niall Davis weren't picked up in any of your leagues after their recent runs, you know, with the injuries ahead of them. Go get those guys right away. Jaquizz Rodgers continues to set career highs in rushing yards. Gillis Lee's probably going to be the featured back, although it's a really bad spot against New England this week.
Also, then, McCoy might still play. I mean, I don't know.
That was
why
silly.
I don't know why the – yeah, right. If the Bills ran him out there last week, there is certainly a possibility that, again, in the same situation, God, they can run him out this week.
Why, Bills?
I don't know why they did that.
While we mentioned Adams and Davante Adams and Montgomery for the Packers, both good adds. Jamison Crowder, seeing his role increase with Jordan Reed out, he's probably going to be out this coming week, which makes Crowder a good start, although he just got cleared and returned to practice.
Right.
But there were reports on Sunday that they were going to hold him out through their bye. Hmm. Who knows? Cole Beasley, too, coming off of his bye. A lot of people might shift him back out to the waiver wire and not be a huge guy. Even with Dez Bryant coming back, the way Dak runs that offense, it goes to Beasley. I think he's still a great add. Deeper running backs, Devontae Booker. Get him on your roster now before it turns into a full-fledged committee or he takes it over from C.J. Anderson, whatever happens in Denver.
Ooh. I'm telling you, though.
Them's fighting words.
We haven't seen Monday night, but you're probably going to listen to it after Monday night comes out. That's fine. I think C.J. Anderson is going to have a really good game.
He probably will.
Monday night.
But it's worth getting Booker because
I agree with
the drumbeat is building,
yes,
right now. And
100%.
You want to get him before it becomes deafening. And then Matt Asiata, Jerick McKinnon twisted his ankle a little bit, and he came back but then left again because he couldn't get on it. So if he ends up sitting, which is a disaster because he plays on Monday night this coming week.
Yeah.
So if he's a late scratch or he's going to be limited, Asiata can catch passes. He can run between the tackles, and he's the goal line back. He will be an ugly but effective like running back to trot out with six teams on bye.
This is a little early, but daily daps to Jerick McKinnon's cleat game.
Oh, my God, yes.
The R.I.P. Harambe.
Those are so good.
R.I.P. Harambe cleats,
although
dude.
Trent or Harambe cleats got injured.
Oh.
Too soon. Can you please be scientific about it? It needs to at least happen twice for it to be.
Oh, around. That's okay. That's fair. And then lastly, tight ends. We mentioned Jack Doyle. Cameron Brate didn't get a lot of work this week.
I was surprised.
It was a horrible game script. They were gifted cheap touchdowns by the 49ers, they didn't pass a lot. And then Vernon Davis, too. As long as Jordan Reed's out, Vernon Davis is falling into a decent workload there.
I think Reed is expected to be back this week, though.
Well, then cast Vernon Davis back into the pile.
All right, there you go. Top performers for Week 7. Andrew Luck, 353 through the air, 3 touchdowns. Drew Brees, meanwhile.
Can we just talk about – sorry to interrupt, but can we just talk about how ridiculous the Titans are, that the Colts literally have one offensive threat in T.Y. Hilton, and that's the dude you let bust off for 130-something yards?
It makes no sense. I mean, they have no other options.
Chester Rogers played over 80% of the snaps for them. I mean, we talk about Jack Doyle, but, like, come on. Titans.
Yeah.
Get with it.
Duh. That's literally all. You had one job, Titans.
One guy to cover.
He had 5 passes, I think, where he caught more than 20 yards on them.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because when you take him away, Andrew Luck gets flustered because he doesn't know where else to go.
Don't blame him. There's nowhere
He's
else to go.
Chester Rogers and Devin Street right now, James.
Devin Street.
Devin Street reappeared.
It's so crazy.
From
I was like,
the dead.
Is that Devin Street out there running around?
Yep.
That's insane. Drew Brees, 367, 3 touchdowns, had a pick as well. He looked good.
On the road.
On the road.
Ah.
Bucking that trend.
Trends.
Holy hell, he looked good. Aaron Rodgers, we talked about, 326 through the air on 56 pass attempts, 3 touchdowns. Tyrod Taylor. Sneakily coming back around, 221 through the air and touchdown, but also had 35 rush yards and a rushing touchdown as well. He's been having decent weeks. I think he's back in the good graces, quite honestly. Jay Ajayi, we know about him, 214, a touchdown. Jeremy Hill on 9 rushes.
Yeah.
Jeremy Hill on 9 rushes had 168 rush yards, 24 receiving yards, and a touchdown as well.
My favorite stats regarding that came from Matthew Berry, who said in his previous 3 games, Hill had had 21 rushes for 138 yards.
Perfect.
And then he had 168 on 9.
Evens it out.
Yep.
This game.
All
174 yards.
So don't
touchdown run.
Don't get mad at yourself if you benched Hill. I am one of those people, and I've had to talk myself out of it because I'm like, there's everything, every writing on the wall was that he's. Oh my gosh.
We're done. Bye.
Get out of here.
See you later.
I'm talking with my hands too much and just hit the board.
You just smacked the board.
Yep. I benched Jeremy Hill, and we're out of here. So see ya.
See you later. Oh, my God. Melvin Gordon, top performer at the running back position as well. 68 rush, 53 receiving, three touchdowns.
Three.
Is Melvin Gordon the Chris Carter of running backs?
Doesn't score touchdowns.
He's making up for lost time last year. He's trying to get two seasons worth of touchdowns in one season.
It's ridiculous. He's probably going to score 15 touchdowns or more this season.
Probably.
He also leads all running backs with 29 red zone rush attempts.
And he will still never average more than 4 yards a carry.
Oh, my God.
But he gets work in the passing game.
He does.
We talked about LeGarrette Blount maybe not doing work when Tom Brady is in.
Revenge game.
Yeah, forget about that.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You people talked about
that. True. No, true. That's true.
I gotta take the L on this one because I had said on Friday's pod I didn't know how the split was going to work out. I thought it was going to be pretty even.
You scared everyone away from these running backs.
But they both they scored all the early touchdowns. So, like, my analysis wasn't that wrong if it was, like, Edelman and Gronk and everybody scored the early ones. But it was the running backs, so don't listen to me.
You were wrong.
You were wrong. LeGarrette Blount is still now scored a touchdown in every game that Tom Brady's played this year.
Mateo.
Season high 127 rush yards.
Oh, yeah.
Season high with Brady in there.
Matt Forte, 100 on the ground, 54 through the air, and two touchdowns as well. It's good to see him get back on track.
If only we could get him to have 30 carries every single week.
He might have another good game in Week 8 against the Browns.
Oh,
but
sure.
People are asking me on Twitter, is Matt Forte back? Should I try to trade him away after this big game? I think you should try to trade him away.
I would agree with that.
Sell high. He's not going to give you this every week.
I think also if you kind of just watch him play, he's definitely lost some juice.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. DeMarco Murray has surprised and continues to surprise. 107 on the ground, 20 through the air, and a touchdown as well. Is he still our RB1 or 2 in this game?
Beast mode.
Doing really well. He has not had a game of less than double digits this year. He's been amazing and amazingly consistent in a position group that has been amazingly inconsistent this year.
Yep.
DeMarco Murray there for you. AJ Green at the wide receiver position, 169 through the air. A touchdown as well. And maybe the catch of the year on that Hail Mary grab where he tipped it to himself and then caught it.
Yeah, that was cool.
Devontae Adams, 132, two touchdowns. T.Y. Hilton, 133 and a touch. Julio Jones, honorable mention, wasn't a top five performer, but that's okay. 174 yards for Julio Jones. He is good, by the way.
Julio.
I'm going to need to use a check source.
Which, thank you to all the late arrivals like Mike Evans and Julio Jones for evening out the top wide receiver scorers. Because I did have I had a fun tweet after the early games.
Right.
I don't know if you saw it, James.
Yes. Oh,
but,
I loved it. I loved it.
It was gross.
It was a disaster.
Tyreek Hill was in like the top 12.
Russell Shepard jumped him.
Russell Shepard.
Top 12 wide receiver.
Jeez.
That's awesome. Rob Gronkowski, he's still alive, 93 and a touch. Delanie Walker, welcome back, pal, 84 and a touchdown for him. Jack Doyle, 78 and a touch. Julius Thomas.
Stupid.
That was stupid.
I benched him for Hunter Henry this week. Last week I did the other way around. I can't figure this out.
But that made sense. And to be honest with you, like, Julius Thomas was doing absolutely nothing.
He was doing absolutely nothing
all year.
Nothing.
And he just happened to absorb Blake Bortles' one touchdown pass at the end of the game.
Gross.
20 yards and a touchdown for Julius Thomas. Vernon Davis, 79 yards, no touchdowns. Six receptions on six targets. So very efficient for him. All right, let's do Daily Daps and get out.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hugs. Give me daps because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
Daily Dap time. We're going to start with the whiz kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gilhar. What you got for us, pal?
I thought about hitting the fantasy live, the intro music again just to troll everybody, but I was like, I'll actually do daps and get us out of here.
All right.
So I wanted to Daily Daps this band I found via Spotify Discover Weekly.
Whoa. You're impinging on franchise.
I don't know. Like, look, it's totally random. It's more in the weeds than franchises stuff.
Oh.
What? What are you trying to say, bro?
Those are fighting words. Whoa.
What do you say? You say I listen to Top 40 radio? Is that what you're trying
to say? That's exactly what he said.
Is that what you're trying to say?
That's what he said. That's what he said.
Trash.
The band I'm going to dap is an instrumental, like, progressive metal band that popped up on Discover Weekly,
but Jesus.
They were good music to grind to, and I was like, oh, this could be good workout music as well, because there's no lyrics to distract you or anything. They're called Animals as Leaders, and they've got this insane guitarist. His name is, where did they go? Tosin Abasi, who frequently will play, like, 7 or 8 string guitars, but it's super melodic, it's good, it's driving. And, like, it just popped in when I was working on stuff this morning, and I actually, like, saved the band so I could go back and listen to their albums later. And then as I was grinding on stuff, it was pretty good. So if you're into that kind of stuff or need good workout, running, or like productivity music,
right,
give Animals as Leaders a spin.
And especially if you don't want to listen to the top 40 trash their franchise listens to on the daily.
Yeah, true.
Then go check
I was out. Actually going to daily dash so. Ariana Grande's new song. Because that's what I've been listening to lately.
Mainstream chise.
Really, what I said was that it was more, the new, it was more in the weeds than
the new Lady Gaga is pretty lit.
Oh, my God.
Don't know if you ever heard of him. His name's Bruno Mars.
Oh, boy.
Top 40 chise.
Top
God.
MC, my guy, Marcus Grant. We're losing it. Go ahead.
This is not good.
I just want to – I want a daily dap. You know, every so often I think we all kind of run across people who aren't in our line of work that just kind of inspire us to do different and better things. So for me, daily dap goes out to Donald Glover, who I've never met. I don't know. But okay. I – just a guy that – you know, I daily dapped Atlanta on the show like a week or so ago. Saw the news last week that he's going to be the new Lando Calrissian.
Yes.
But just going back and, you know, seeing all the stuff he's done, you know, from, you know, Atlanta to now this Lando thing to Community to the Childish Gambino stuff that he has done, just to kind of watch somebody who is multi-talented, who does different things, who is really hard to pigeonhole into any one thing. I know that, you know, for the group of us that, you know, obviously fantasy is what we do, and that's why most of you out there listening know us and communicate with us. But knowing that as a group, we all kind of have very diverse interests beyond just football.
What? No,
you're like
shocking.
Top 40 rating.
Shocking
me.
You're not a real person. You're just a fantasy bot.
But I find inspiration in people who are, you know, multi-talented and multi-dimensional and have used that as their, you know, their, not only their, you know, their vocation, but their avocation. And I don't know, I've just been recently really inspired by just watching his career and just kind of, you know, setting career goals along those
lines. He is so talented. He's he's a non-psycho Chris Brown.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That's okay. Nice.
He is extremely talented.
He does it all, and he does it all well.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Matt Harmon, what's up?
Donald Glover is going to really like when he listens to this podcast, and Chris Brown's not going to. So. It's too bad. You lose one listener, you gain one. My daily dap is actually going to go out to my dad.
Okay.
My dad bought a beach house down there in Emerald Isle where he lives right now. He's rented there for the past, I get, almost 3 years now since he moved. And so he's officially a beach dude now, which is great because this is like
cool.
I can remember after like my parents got divorced and he was like, I don't really know what to do with my life. And I was like, Dad, just go like live by the beach. And he's like, what about you? And this is like 3 years ago back when I lived in Virginia. And he's like, well, I don't know if I want to be away from like my kids or whatever. I'm like, Dad, you don't know where the hell I'm going to be or Emily or my sisters are going to be in 3 years. And now I'm in freaking California. Like,
right.
I told you, like, bro, don't make your plans around me. So I'm very happy for him that he's actually taken this step and is like legit a beach dude now. And it would it would be great if like I actually lived there and could ever go to his beach house, but you know, whatever.
Okay. All right. Well, West Virginia is very far from here. I didn't realize that there was any coastline on West Virginia.
Yeah, what ocean does that border?
It's in Emerald.
He lived beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
Yes.
I had to dig that out of the ATN soundboard. I was scrambling the whole time. I'm like, Harmon, keep rambling.
I could see you do it. I was trying to throw you a bone.
For those that missed it.
And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
That's my dad. to be clear, he lives, he lives and will be living now continuously as a homeowner in North Carolina's Emerald Isle.
Oh, right. I see. Okay.
So take your narrative. Get out of here.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. Franchise, what's up?
I finally made it to the Greek Theater after living in L.A. for 3.5
years.
Hey,
we got him to the Greek.
Yeah,
got him to the Greek,
I got
baby.
To the Greek on right. Friday night to see Young the Giant, which is I've been looking forward to seeing them. I dapped their album a couple weeks ago. Saw them live. Great show. We had great seats. It was awesome. So Greek Theater, so clean. Like I was blown
awesome.
Away by how clean it was everywhere. Yeah. And just a cool setting to see a show, and Young the Giant killed it, and they're getting my daily daps.
Pretty good of you to go off the beaten path and not dap, you know, like Jason Mraz.
Katy Perry's new album.
Wait,
or
Jason Mraz, who pulled for top 40?
I don't know. Is he not top 40 anymore?
I don't think he's I don't know if he's made a song in like 5 years.
I've been listening to a lot of the Biebs lately.
He's been busy on his avocado farm.
That's true.
A lot of Bieber.
What the hell is happening in this podcast right now?
I don't really have a daps other than an undaps. I didn't like the Walking Dead season premiere, man. I didn't like it at all.
The yawning mad?
I didn't enjoy
it. Now, what didn't you like about it?
Look, I'm not going to give any spoilers. I just didn't like it. I wasn't a fan.
Okay. So I got to ask you, though, because, and I don't watch the show, but I just know watching my Twitter timeline, a lot of people seem traumatized, and a lot of people, or more than one person, I should say, compared it to The Red Wedding. And I know that you sort of tapped out around.
Exactly.
So are you about to tap out?
I am.
Okay.
I'm giving it one more episode, and then I'm like, all right, let's see where we're at. But I don't know, man.
Here's all I'll say, and it's spoiler-free for anybody listening.
Okay.
Is that this episode, I was done, and Harmon and I were like, wow, what an episode. Because it was kind of an emotional toll, and it was graphic, and it was violent, and it was a lot. But what I thought last night as I was dwelling on the episode was that that was all extremely intentional. And it was for a point for both the viewers and the characters on the show, because through The Walking Dead, this has been a tremendously violent show throughout its entire run, to the point where everybody's kind of gotten desensitized to it. It's like, yeah, okay,
right.
No big. Like, yeah. They're going to kill some zombies. Yeah. Oh, no big. They're going to kill some people. Well, guess what? They turned that on its head this time. They upped the ante to get you to once again be, whoa! Whoa, this is violent. This is real.
I always go back to this. I think the greatest show ever created was The Sopranos. All right?
Sopranos is a great show.
And they were able to expand their universe and expand the way they did storytelling. But the core of the show was always the same for 7 freaking seasons, and no one hated it until the end. But honestly, it was the best show ever made on television, in my opinion. And I just feel like The Walking Dead, they're trying to change, like, to your point, I think they're just trying to change it up, and I didn't like it.
I feel I'm very close to being out. I feel it's a progression from where they were last year, because also trying to prevent spoilers, you know the episode where there was the big, like, raid? That was very against the grain for what our heroes had done the whole time.
I hear what you're saying.
And now this is kind of the comeuppance and the full circle and the consequences of that. So I think it's cool. I was a little put off at first, but I'm curious to see where they take it.
People are so weak.
I know. I'm almost out.
No, I'm in.
No. I mean people like James.
Oh, okay.
People like James are weak.
Oh, okay.
Just shows should just shake you know what up all the time. Just.
Also,
kill everybody off. Who cares? Don't get attached to anybody.
It did make me think.
What the hell are you talking about?
You know what's hilarious is that all the time you see with these shows, this and Game of Thrones especially, people are like, I'm done. That's it. I'm done. Every time one of these damn shows air, it's the number one trending topic on Twitter, and it's all anybody 100%. Can talk about the days
you
after.
Sheep don't know
no,
what you're
but,
doing.
But to be fair, to my point, I haven't gone back.
That's
Game
true.
Of Thrones.
It's like after you party really hard one night and you wake up the next day, you're like, I'm never drinking again.
Yeah, I stopped telling myself.
And then by like 5 yeah. o'clock
no, I stopped telling myself
you,
that
you have your beer.
That one's not, no, that one doesn't make any sense. I never understood
it
that
It makes
one
sense.
Because,
yeah.
No, because I it always does. Had a hell of Wrong. A lot of fun, and it only sucked in the morning.
Are we still recording?
Yes.
I don't even know what's going on. But to rinse the flavor out of my mouth, I watched Westworld.
Okay.
Also, a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit off the beaten path there, but I enjoyed that show. It's a good show. It's got the makings of a great show. I hope they can get there. I will say that. So there you go. Those are my daily naps.
Phew. All right. That was a tangent. Hope you all enjoyed it.
No one did.
Oh, boy. All right. For Alex Gellhar, the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Top 40 Chise, Matt Franchise, MG by Guy Marcus Grant, Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. See ya.
See you later.
Dude, I gotta be honest. That Bruno Mars new one, the 24K Magic.
Oh, I haven't heard this.
Oh my God.
You haven't heard it, MG?
Straight fire. If you don't want to start just going to Vegas and throwing down after that, the video's amazing, by the way.
Yo, all right, should we get this show on the road?
Yo, let's go!
Guys, I wonder if my political leanings are starting to become a little too clear. Somebody tweeted me today, it says I lost my week, but I refuse to accept the results. Widespread points fraud. The whole fantasy system is rigged, folks.
Widespread points fraud.
Just out of nowhere, somebody tweeted that to me.